Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you. Much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Really glad you tuned in, and a very happy Monday to you. Well, before we get to today's show, I have got to just pause and say a big, audacious thank you. Thank you, thank you for the way that you turned out for last week's share event, our fall share event. I am telling you what, I mean, God is doing so much behind the scenes, and our audience is reaching to the ends of the earth. It is absolutely amazing. But you know why that's happening? It's because of God's faithfulness and your faithfulness, because we are a listener-supported ministry. And last fall, we had a record-breaking share event. This fall blew it out of the water. I mean, we're absolutely amazed at how God moved, how you moved and stepped up, and what God's doing and what he's going to do. And I just want to say thank you. And we prayed behind the scenes, and I continue to pray God's richest blessings on you and yours as we together just get a vision for what God might do, because we are making ourselves available. How powerful. Okay, here's my question. Actually, it's a few questions. Are you ready? Who's the best leader you know? Who is the best leader you know? Who's had the greatest impact on you, living or dead? Maybe it's an author. Maybe it's a leader that you've just admired from afar. What about their influence has stuck with you? Think about that. And then how will you maybe make changes in your life? If God's nudging you to make some adjustments in your life, your perspective, even the story you tell yourself, the risks you take, are you willing to make adjustments in your life to impact your sphere of influence? Well, my guest today is Larry Osborne. He's going to share some counterintuitive leadership secrets that produce lasting change and innovation without the broken relationships and organizational dysfunction that so often accompany even the most needed changes. We're going to unpack his book, Sticky Leaders. And I want you to know this conversation isn't just for those who serve in a leadership role. You are an influencer, whether you like it or not. And I want to say, you and I can always grow in this regard when it comes to how we steward the opportunities God puts before us. Remember, Jesus said, I've appointed you to bear fruit that lasts. Don't you want to live a life where your fruit outlives you? Well, that comes from abiding in the vine. That comes from wise living, following Jesus. And sometimes we just need to make adjustments so that we can bear the most amount of fruit, you know, to abide in such a deep way that we're following Jesus' lead on every sense of the word. So let me tell you about my guest, and we will get him on the show. Larry Osborne's a teaching pastor at North Coast Church in northern San Diego County. He speaks extensively on subjects of leadership and spiritual formation. He and his wife, Nancy, live in Oceanside, California. I wish I lived in a place called Oceanside. I'm just saying. Larry, welcome back to the show.
Well, it's good to be with you again. Thank you.
Is Oceanside just like the most romantic place to live?
Anywhere on the coast down here is. It's,
wow.
Somebody has to do it.
So exactly.
Said, okay,
you're
Lord.
A my Lord. Send me. All right. So good to have you back with us. I'm looking forward to the conversation. And as you know, we love to start out talking scripture. And I'm just wondering if there's a passage you've been thinking about these days that you can share with us.
Well, you know, almost always when people ask me a favorite passage, I go to Colossians 1, 28 and 29. It's kind of a life verse and tells me as a Christian what I'm trying to do with my kids, my extended family, my friends. As a pastor, tells me what I'm trying to do. And it's just labor with everything I've got in me so that I might present everybody complete in Jesus.
Wow.
That's kind of the goal of the church, the goal of life, the goal of relationships. At the end of the day, how have I advanced the people in the kingdom to be more like the king wants them to be?
How have I advanced people in the kingdom to be more like the king wants them to be? That could be a bumper sticker. I'm just saying. That's fantastic.
You have to have a big car.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So I opened with a few questions, and I want to ask them to you, Larry, just to get to know you a little bit better. Who is the best leader that you know? I mean, somebody that you respect and admire greatly.
Well, I've been blessed to be around tons of them, but if I had to pick out one, especially in their impact on my life, it'd be a person that nobody even knows of. His name was Wally Norling, and he was a guy whose fruit grew on other people's trees.
Wow.
He poured his life into young, in my case, pastors and people, and didn't really care whether he got the billing. He wanted to be the wind beneath their wings. And he was a man of great wisdom and just an incredible security that allowed him to not worry who got top billing. And as a young leader, that was incredibly impactful on me
Boy.
and has pretty much shaped most of my life.
My boss always says we can.
I pick a guy nobody's ever heard
I love it. I love it. Wally, no less. I mean, truly, that's amazing.
of.
My boss always says we can get a lot done if we don't care who gets the credit. You know, and I love that. And I think it's, but we got to settle the identity issue because we do live in a results productivity oriented culture full of very insecure people. I mean, so you look at Wally, what was his secret to his just having such a humble identity? I mean, a humble confidence in him, that he could sow in others without needing to be seen himself.
Well, I think he learned a lot of his lessons the hard way. You know, we learn everything we know through dumb tacks, I like to say. We
Yeah.
pay pays it for us. And he kind of paid his own dumb taxes in the early years. He used to pour into me and some other people he was working with all the time, like, you have nothing to prove and no one to impress. Nothing to prove and no one to impress. Nothing to prove and no one to impress. And so much of what happens in our families, our marriages, if you're privileged to be in a leadership position, so much of the dysfunction happens because we've got voices in our head that aren't the voices of the Lord or the Holy Spirit. They're father wounds or old things from the past, something. And we live our life trying to impress people when all we can do is do our best, take a nap, and please Jesus.
It's so
He just pounded that into my head, like, Larry, it's really okay. Great success in the eyes of the world, not just at the end of the day, know you were good. You have nothing to prove. You have no one to impress. Live that way. And I
so
can't
good.
tell you how freeing that is. Incredibly freeing.
So freeing. And you know, I remember years ago, God just, I mean, put these three words in my head about just because that whole idea, no one to nothing to prove, you know, nobody to impress, but pity, proof, and praise. Any efforts, you know, like feel sorry for me or affirm me and prove to me that I'm somebody, you know, or praise, you know, looking for praise from people other than God. Those to me are all traps as far as trying to get from people what only God can give. And I just was, those were just sort of like gatekeepers in some of my formative years because it's like you do get a little beat up, but you don't use your influence to get people to feel sorry for you or to prop you up or to affirm that you really are something. You know what I mean? It was just super helpful to me, but.
Once anybody gets on the performance to, they consider their value tied to their performance. Again, you want to do the best you can, work hard. But at the end of the day, you know, Proverbs talks about we prepare the horse for battle, but victory belongs to the Lord. And I really have no control of the outcome. I can do the very best, and there can be an Achan in the camp that causes victory to turn into defeat. Or I can be an idiot like a Samson was and have 18 to 20 years of great success and then think, well, look at my success. God must be pleased with me. So really, at the end of the day, it's, you know what? Do the best you can, honor him, and like I like to say, take a nap.
That's so
That's
good.
like it's so relaxing. It's hard enough without adding extra pressures.
Boy, in fact, you know, that was going to be my next question is what advice would you give to up and coming leaders? But I think that's it. Do your best, take a nap, please Jesus.
Yeah,
Anything you'd add?
prepare the horse for battle. I mean, let me take it not only a leader of an organization, and again, you do want metrics, you want to measure, you want to see, you know, for you want to see how your show is doing, are people responding, and to just ignore that would be foolish. But at the same time, to have all your identity tied into whether something's going well or not, when you've done the best to your understanding of what God wants, is it's just a path to nowhere. Because once performance becomes what you're living for, you'll never perform enough. Because every single day you'll go to bed, I could have done a little better. And you rise to the top of whatever you rise to the top of, there's always a bigger gorilla somewhere. And even when you get to the very top of the top, then you want to be something else. I think of Michael Jordan, you know, all the dreams from high school, could I make my team, college, pro, could I be a star, could I be top 50, could I be, you know, the best of all time, and yet what do you want to do? He wanted to hit a curveball. It's just like, you just, life doesn't work that way.
Boy, so good.
Play your role, do your best.
Love, love it. Well, in your book, Sticky Leaders, the subtitle is Secret to Lasting Change and Innovation. Your opening advice, I love this, start with an exit strategy, you said. So speak to that if you would. That's the place to start. Say more.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Pretty much every Christian knows Genesis chapter 3. You know, in our Bible, the first chapter is life as God intended it to be. And then by chapter 3, you know, who created it? Life as God intended it to be. And then why everything's all messed up. So we preach Genesis 3, but we don't really believe it. We constantly are assuming if we do everything right, if we listen to the Lord enough, if we pray enough, if we have enough faith, then everything will work out. But the truth of the matter is, in this world, everything is broken. And even when I'm in my most godly spiritual state, there's static on the line. I've got a sin nature, and I don't always hear perfectly from the Lord. And the truth of the matter is, most changes, most innovations fail. They always have, and they always will. And wise people don't bet the farm. What they do is they give it all they've got, but they've got an exit strategy just in case what they were so sure of doesn't work in the real world like it did in their head or in their planning sheets of paper.
I loved what you said, where don't make a change where you could have an experiment. And maybe that's my, I'm not quoting it exactly, but the idea is, you know, and that's the thing is we'll bet the farm or we just will make a massive change where wisdom maybe would call us to really create an experiment. Say more about that.
Yes. Yeah. Well, especially for anybody who's leading anything, large or small, what we do is when it's time to change, we usually lobby too hard for it. We try to convince everybody why this is the best thing ever. And at the end of the day, we've set ourselves up so that if we're wrong, we're dead. And language is so important. What if the pro-choice movement had been called pro-abortion? You think there might have been a different outcome? You know, words really matter in how people respond to things. And so I've always, as a leader, tried to use phrases like we're going to try, we're going to experiment. And when you have a new initiative and it fails, you're a failed leader. When you have an experiment and it fails, you're a brilliant scientist because you're eliminating the options. So there is so much power in just stepping back and saying, how's this going to be heard? Am I overselling this thing? Because often all you need is you need the permission to give something a trial and to see whether it works. And that would be true in even leading your family. Instead of, oh, we're all going to do this, and then it didn't quite work out like I thought. Just said, we're going to try this for, 2 weeks, 6 months, whatever it would be. And then we're going to reevaluate. It's a much better way to go than with the false certainty as if we always understand what the future holds.
Love this. Talking to Larry Osborne today. Title of his book, Sticky Leaders, The Secret to Lasting Change and Innovation. If you want to call in with a question, we'll open the phone lines a couple of times. For short amounts of time, I want to give Larry as much time as possible. But if you've got a question about taking risks, about wisdom and leading, 877-933-2484. Maybe leading your family, leading your business, leading a group in church. What is it? We'd love to hear from you. 877-93-FAITH or email me, Susie@MyFaithRadio.com. Susie@MyFaithRadio.com. If you want in on the drawing, include your address as well. Back in a minute. Tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to author Pastor Larry Osborne. I always like to call him a seasoned saint. He's got so much wisdom to share. This book we're talking about today, Sticky Leaders, The Secret to Lasting Change and Innovation. Here's my question for you. I want to give Larry as much time as possible, but I'd just love to know, is there a leader or somebody who's just deeply impacted you? Who are they and what about them stuck with you? I want to know. And what does that tell you about your life? Is there something that challenges you as far as the legacy that you want to leave? We'll take a few calls if you call in. But if not, I want to keep going here with Larry. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. And Larry, you offer this piece of advice. Never make a change. Oh, I already talked about that. Sorry, this is the one. Against trusting everything the innovators are saying. You caution against trusting everything that the innovators are saying. Say more about that.
Yeah, well, what happens is, you know, people who are out there innovating often have the idea that they understand why everything is working, and we kind of jump on bandwagons. You'll notice in the business world, in the church world, whatever people are saying to us, it's like, well, that's what all the experts say. But the truth of the matter is the experts are often experts on their own environment and their own situation. And their wisdom doesn't always fit every single situation. And so one of the things I found is you got to be careful on who you listen to. Otherwise, you're going to constantly be jumping on the bandwagon. You've kind of noticed in the Christian community there's always a crisis du jour. And if we lose on that thing, be it an election or a proposition or a law or a court decision, then Christianity, as we know it, will end, and somehow it always continues. But there's also a bandwagon du jour that's always coming around, and this is the new secret sauce. And if you will simply do this in your family, you'll do it in your business. If we will add this program to our church, then everything will go great. And the truth of the matter is it doesn't always work that way.
Yeah, and that's the thing, the whole idea of it seems like the what they are saying, the quote they, I always think about these they people sitting behind a desk and dictating to everybody because they've not done it themselves, you know, what they are saying. And truly, you can see, and maybe we've seen been parts of churches where it's this and then it's that and it's bandwagon this and bandwagon that. But that's exhausting. But I also think it makes maybe the people lose confidence in their leader because it's like you're, you know, talk about just the impact of that. Because I think not only do you have fatigue, but you kind of lose some credibility, too, with your people.
Yeah, you only have so much credibility that you're able to have. And you start giving those chips away because you jump on bandwagon after bandwagon. There's always going to be somebody new around who loves it because they don't know the history of failures. It kind of reminds me sometimes of what I tell people who get overly excited about the latest prophetic thing that's happening in terms of the newspaper and the Bible, and absolutely Jesus is coming back. But I've lived long enough to see a whole bunch of people who had it all figured out when, where, and how, only to find out, whoops. Mm. And yet what's amazing is some of the people, they just come back with another one and another one and another one. What happens is people have been around for a while go cynical, but there's always somebody new who hasn't been around, and then they jump on the bandwagon. And it's kind of an exciting way to live, but the end results are usually pretty negative for the individual and the organization.
Well, Larry, this may seem a tad off topic, but I really don't think it is. I'd love for you to talk about the idea of sustainability with regards to leadership. It's so heartbreaking how many leaders seem to be falling out of the race. And I don't mean losing their salvation. I'm just saying falling out of the race. In other words, you hear about moral failures. You hear about massive burnout. And I think so much of it goes back to the fatigue of doing more than God asked you to. But I want you to speak to that because this is people are watching, and there's a ripple effect to this. So say a word about that, if you would.
Well, there's a couple things going on. First of all, leading anything is hard, from leading a family to leading a school, leading a company, leading a department, leading a church. One of the unique things, though, about churches is that we can be a little like a fish in water. You ask the fish, how's the water? It goes, what water? Because that's all it's known. And we don't often realize that historically, for almost 2,000 years, a church of 150 or 200 was huge. And so we've got a lot of pastors out there who are trying to lead churches the way they were led 50, 70, 100 years ago, 200 years ago. And the size is, I mean, we consider a church of 250, 300 small now. And it just sets them up for burnout because, once again, they become performance-oriented. And the moment that it's all about, I got to do more, and Jesus' whole agenda is going to fall apart if I don't do everything, is going to mess people up. I often use a sports illustration that as a leader and a team, it's okay to come to the point of exhaustion, but that's what you do during the playoffs. When the playoffs comes, everybody plays hurt. But when you spend your whole life and all season acting like every game's a playoff game, every day's a spiritual playoff game, all you're going to do is wear yourself out. At the end of the day, a glacier does far more than an avalanche, and you just can't be avalanche, avalanche, avalanche. And that's what I find happening. No margin, taking themselves too seriously. And we just weren't wired to live that way.
Indeed. And again, it goes back to your opening story about Wally, who had such... Wally? Is that his name?
Wally Norling was his name.
Yeah. I mean, he had such an impact on you because he you know, sowed a lot of wisdom into you, but he also had the humility to just... He didn't need to be the guy. And again, we covered this on the show a few weeks ago. It was called The Grasshopper Myth, and I forget the author's name, but he was talking... He's a pastor of small churches, and he said he almost killed himself feeling like the next big thing... Carl Vaders, thanks, Matt. That's his name. But he felt like, you know, you're a failure unless you're a megachurch pastor. And he finally realized, this is who God's called me to shepherd. I'm going to find contentment in it. And I actually represent the majority, because most churches are this size. And if we all live with a sense of discontentment because we're just have-nots, we're going to miss the treasure of the people that we're called to lead. And I thought it was just a brilliant message. But there is something about saying, the lines have fallen for me in pleasant places. Help me to be content with where God has me. What say you?
Yeah. Well, I think what we forget, when I first came to North Coast Church, it was 70 people.
Wow.
Adults, about 128, quickly grew to 150. And the end of year three was 151. So, and now I pastor one of the largest churches in the country. Same church, but different environment. And I came to a conclusion then that has stuck with me. I was pretty much depressed because I'd done youth ministry before. It'd always been large. And now I'm depressed because we're going a third a person a year. What's wrong with me? That same kind of stuff you're talking about. And then I realized that the same mental math that was making me depressed would have made me arrogant if we'd had great success right away.
Wow.
And that's the problem, is you can feel very depressed because, in the case of this pastor, hey, I'm not a mega church, but what we don't understand is you can have one of the largest churches in the country and you could still hit that depression because maybe it stops growing, or maybe, you know, your time kind of runs out and you're not the person everybody's looking for or talking to or asking to speak at the conferences anymore. Everybody hits it, and the kingdom of God just keeps going on, and he goes next, next, next. And the moment we realize all we do have is we have a bit part in his great drama, play our part well, big or small, but even when we think it's huge, it's really not that big. Three generations later, nobody remembers who you are. You're a prophet to your own generation. You're a leader to your own family. And then God goes next, next, next.
And that's enough to keep you humble. And just if it isn't, then remember how small Earth is compared to the other planets in the galaxy. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Yeah, we're incredibly important. God, you know, he died for us. But the other thing, we're not as important as we think we are in our self-importance. And it's hard to last as a leader when you wake up every day thinking you're more important than you are, because you end up putting pressure that's not there. He said, when you're weary and heavy laden, come unto me and I'll show you weariness. No. He said, come unto me if you're weary and heavy laden and I'll give you rest. And my yoke and steering guide is easy. Now, there's hard days, but that's not the norm.
Wow. Trust Jesus. Work hard. Take a nap. Please, Jesus. Do your best. Take a nap. Please, Jesus. That's what Larry Osborne says. More with him when we return. Email me if you want in on the drawing. Susie@myfaithradio.com. And we will be back in a moment. Glad you tuned in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to my friend, author, Pastor Larry Osborne. His latest book is titled Sticky Leaders, The Secret to Lasting Change and Innovation. As Larry and I were talking before the show, this book, you know, he consults leaders, he leads leaders, but this book and the message isn't just for those who have an official leadership role. We are all people of influence, and we all have the temptation to run too hard, to sign up for things God never asked us to do, to get into the groupthink mentality and jump on bandwagons that aren't God's idea for us. Maybe it's a God idea for someone else, not for us. And we're talking about how you navigate those waters. We really want, as you hear in our tagline every day, want you to last long and finish strong. And the only sustainable way to live is to stay in step with God's will for you. And as Larry said before the break, do your best, take a nap, please Jesus. That's a great place to start. Let's talk for a moment, if we would, about innovation. And you say in the book, if the idea in itself, when we're thinking about these group thinks and these all these different ideas, the latest, greatest trend, if it doesn't make a difference, it's not innovation. Say more about that.
Yeah, I think now here we're speaking, especially to people that are leading something. There's this sense of we want to be out on the cutting edge and all of this. And if you're on the cutting edge to just be on the cutting edge, all you're going to do is exhaust people and exhaust resources and pretty much accomplish nothing. There are a whole lot of things that have been out there that are better but not really wanted. I'll give you an example. The keyboard that most people use called the QWERTY keyboard, where with K-W-E-R-T-Y up towards the top. There's another one called the Dvorak keyboard that is faster typing. And when it came out, if you will learn to do that, you can type much faster because the original one was designed for manual typewriters, and typists were getting so fast that they wanted to slow them down so the keys wouldn't get stuck. And so actually the keyboard we use is designed to make you a slower typist. Well, so what? There's a faster one. But guess what? Nobody feels the need for a faster one. And at the end of the day, it's not an innovation. It's just a gimmick. And that sometimes happens in churches and in organizations and places where we have to leave, where we get to lead. We get the idea that the tried and true is just, well, it's just too old. It's been around forever. Let's just shake things up. And shaking things up for no reason at all does nothing but shake things up. Never helps accomplish a cause.
Boy, good reminder. Well, in the book, you tell a story about a time when your worship pastor wanted to put drums in the sanctuary. This is years ago. And it was a scary proposition at the time. Would you mind telling us that story and what came of it?
Yeah. Well, part of it, and boy, this would go for parents or people who lead all kinds of different, you know, anywhere you have it, that sometimes what you got to do is give people the opportunity to try something as long as you have an exit strategy if it doesn't work out. Because, again, as a parent or a leader of some smaller organization, a large church, a department, whatever, if you're always afraid of failure and everything has to run through you, the problem is that you don't know everything. And sometimes people who are wanting to push that envelope and say, hey, give me a chance, they're right. They're way ahead of you. And in this case, this was long ago, far away in another galaxy when drums in a church was kind of a big deal. I had a worship pastor, and we'd been talking about it, and I came in one week, opened the doors, and there were drums on stage. And his, I'll call him Paul because his name was Paul. I looked at Paul and I said, Paul, you think we're ready? And he said, yes. Now, I didn't tell him. In my mind, I'm going, dude, we're 3 months from this. What are you doing? You're going to kill me. But I looked at him and I said, that's what we hired you for. And turned around, went to my office, prayed like crazy. Because here's what I knew. If I was right and we weren't ready for that, then we'd get a lot of complaints and they'd be gone the next week. And if I was wrong and we really were ready for it, well, then we had together as a leadership team a much wiser decision than I would have ever made on my own. And by the way, I was wrong on that one.
Fantastic.
We were more than ripe for it. And it was the beginning of some important movement in the direction and structure of what we were doing to reach our particular community. Would have never happened if I wasn't trusting people to sometimes do some things that I didn't think would work.
Well, the fact that you accepted his influence and received his input, I mean, just that and what it must have done to knit you together, where you really showed confidence in him. And you can see if someone is the bottleneck and everything gets controlled and everything it is about your own perspective, even, you know, the most savvy innovators would be shut down over time, wouldn't they?
Absolutely, because you can't know everything. You're not always a part of, you know, culture shifts, time shifts, all kinds of things happen. So, you know, that was one kind of classic story of it. But little examples of that have been a part of my leadership the entire time that I've had the privilege of leading this church. And pretty much without fail, it's paid very high dividends. Because once again, I'm always asking myself this question. If I'm right, how bad is it? You know, and if they're wrong, how bad is the mess they're going to make? And if it's something I can clean up pretty quick, it's like, hey, give them the chance. That's what I sure wanted as a young leader.
Fantastic. So early in your years of ministry, you wrote about this in the book. You talk about facing some pretty strong opposition to some much-needed changes that you needed to tend to. Would you mind, I mean, talk about that time a little bit? Tell us how you handled it, what you learned.
Well, I mean, in my very beginning years, some of the mistakes I made is I tried to make too many changes too quick. And then I got gun-shy, like many leaders get, and then I was always afraid of the collateral damage. If we made a change, then, oh, who else is going to get upset? And the truth of the matter is you're always going to lose people whatever it is you do. Somebody's going to be upset. So especially in ministry circles, you have to choose who you lose. And at the end of the day, I had to step back and say, okay, I can graciously push forward these changes and make them. I don't have to get mad at the people who aren't ready to make them. But we've got to make some changes, and it's okay if a few people leave, if many people come. And that's what holds many organizations back. They're so afraid to lose anybody, they can't gain anybody.
Wow, that's amazing. Choose who you lose. What advice do you have for the pastor listening today who feels stuck between a rock and a hard place? He knows he needs to make some of these changes, but he thinks, I may likely lose my job if I do. I mean, he literally feels stuck.
Well, Jesus said something about change that, and we Christian circles tend to notice only one part of it. He said that he was asked why people weren't responding to him, and he said, well, listen, new wine has to go into what? New wineskins, right? But he also said, no one who has tasted the old wants the new. And I think many leaders who feel stuck, what they're trying to do is they're trying to take people who have been ministered to by the old and say, now you have to learn to like the new. Rather than saying, how can I live in a both-and world? Start and feed the new while still honoring and keeping around the past. An example of that would be I call it innovating on the fringe. And instead of coming and saying, okay, if you love Jesus, you're going to learn to like a big subwoofer. It's like, why couldn't a church have two services? One that's more contemporary and one that's more traditional. And there are just all kinds of opportunities to do that, to say, we're going to start this over here as a new thing. And if it's really of God, it'll take over. Without looking at the old and saying, thank you for getting us here, and now goodbye, get out of here. And frankly, that's what a lot of people feel in their churches, that the focus on youth, and we are a very young church, but the focus on youth can unintentionally be a disregard of the aged. And that's, I don't think that pleases Jesus. We need a both-and world.
We definitely, we need a both-and world. And truly, that segregates us generationally, truly. If they're feeling disenfranchised and if they're feeling not heard and dismissed and sidelined, and oftentimes those are the seasoned believers, those are the tithers. And if there's a time where it seems like we almost idolize the younger culture, and while we do need to meet them, and you know, because we have that mass exodus, I mean, boy, you sure can appreciate a pastor's scenario of how do I deal with this? How do I do the both? And I mean, I'm hearing stories over and over again of people who got into worship leading because they loved to worship and they were good musicians, saying, I never thought that I would age out, that I'm not young and hip enough anymore, and so I'm out of a job. I mean, what to do, you know?
Yeah, and that's really, frankly, like you mentioned, music is one of the big areas. It has changed in our culture. And if I want to be a dinosaur and, you know, rail against the changes, fine, but it doesn't do any good. You know, that's like me going to South America and deciding I'm a punctual on-time person in a culture that measures time relationally more than linearly. Mm. Like, I could start all my services at time, but I'm going to be alone.
Yeah.
and that often, I think, as a leader, and again, this is in our families, the Sunday school classes we lead, whatever, we can decide either rail against the culture or we can be a missionary to the culture. And I've chosen my life to be a missionary to the culture. Imagine how you would succeed if you went to another culture, another nation, and you railed against that nation and told them how good the United States was. You'd never have any impact.
That's exactly right.
It's the same thing. Think like a missionary, adapt, and bring people to Jesus. That's what it's about, not our preferences.
When you say, if you want to find the kinds of ideas that lead to genuine innovation, change paradigms, and the kinds of things that people actually use, start by asking yourself these two questions. What frustrates me most? what's broken most. So thinking of that, not only the pastoral leader or the person who's ahead of a business or a department, but the person even leading their family, the kinds of innovation, change paradigms that actually impact for the good. Ask yourself these two questions. What frustrates me most? What's broken most? Speak to that first one. What frustrates me most? Maybe you can even think of an example in your own church leadership.
Yeah, well, see, when we want change or innovation just for change or innovation, we don't ask those questions. But if we look into our own life and say, what is the thing that just drives me nuts? And is there any way to fix it? That's often God's way of birthing leadership within a person. In fact, I find high impact churches. Their pastors almost always are a mixture of a background in which they have negative things. They say, I'm going to prove it doesn't have to be that way. And positive things, they say, I want to reproduce that. I know that's very true in my own life. I grew up in a church that had more rules than Jesus could have ever thought of. If the Bible had a fence, they drew, 10 or 12 fences just in case to keep us away from God's fence. And I grew up saying, why does it have to be that way? Why are we so out of touch with culture and whatever? And it was part of God's birthing in me, a desire to have a church that would be radically biblical on one sense, but culturally connected on another. And I don't think every church has to be like the church I pastor. But anybody who leads a Sunday school class, a church, or an organization, if they're not true to what's birthed in their heart, they're going to be a bad leader. Because you were made the way you were made, and God had you have the experiences you had so that you would become who you are. And that's what you take to the table, whether you're leading something big or small.
And imagine what would happen if you got so comfortable in your own skin, comfortable with your story, comfortable with God's grace, so that you could just be at rest with being your best, with taking a nap, with pleasing Jesus, and sowing your seeds every day, and tending to the things God has given you to do. Imagine how much more doable life would be. When we come back, we're going to talk about our failures. And Larry says that as long as we fail forward, our failures don't have to have the last say. Talking to Larry Osborne, talking about his book, Sticky Leaders. More with him when we return. You're having a great day today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to author Pastor Larry Osborne about his book, Sticky Leaders, The Secret to Lasting Change and Innovation. Love talking to this guy. So many wise lines come out. I can't take notes fast enough. That's tricky to do when you're doing a live show, I'm just saying. But one of the things, Larry, that you say is one of the geniuses of true innovators who are consistently looking for opportunities and innovative ways to change, to make things better. One of their geniuses is that they've learned to fail forward. Say more about that.
Yeah, well, when you haven't bet the farm and put everything into every new idea you want to try or whatever, when you fail, it becomes, as we mentioned earlier, more of an experiment, if those are the terms and all that you're using. And I think of someone like Edison. He tried hundreds and hundreds of things trying to figure out what filament would cause a light bulb to actually be able to work. And along the way, he had to eliminate, this won't work, this won't work, this won't work, this won't work. And every time he did that, he was getting closer to what would work. And so I think one of the things that I see consistently in people who have a long track record of successful leadership, again, big or small, is that they're not defined by failure because they haven't backed themselves into a corner. Going back to the very first thing we talked about, they understand Genesis 3 still is true. Most things fail. And so they start with an exit strategy just in case it were wrong. And then what you end up doing is you fail forward. You learn what doesn't work, which is one more step towards what does work.
Talk about, we have this consumer mentality. I mean, I love the church. Kevin and I, we feel a huge part of our calling is to strengthen the church and encourage pastors as we travel around and speak at different places. So I want to just make that caveat. But the truth of the matter is, we still in America, in this blessed nation, as Christians, kind of come to church with a consumer mentality, and you hear this. I mean, stats prove that the majority of Christians don't have the biblical literacy, maybe that they could have given all the resources we have. So you put those two things together. It seems pastors have an almost impossible uphill climb. I mean, truly, especially if they hand the power over to the people completely to try to be and do everything that the people think and to keep them happy so they don't leave. Maybe speak to that dynamic. I know it really does go back to living for the audience of one, but boy, that sure seems like a heavy load to carry.
Yeah, and there's a sense in which the consumer Christian is today's whipping boy and shouldn't be, and another sense where it's really true. As a leader, you can't always be taking a poll because you're not a leader then. The only time I saw a survey taken in the scriptures, the end result was 39 more years marching around in the desert. Like with our leadership team, we're always saying, listen, we're not here to find out what the old people want, the young people want, the theys, et cetera. Our job is to figure out what does God want. But then at the end of the day, you have to adapt to the people that you're serving, and you have to think like a shepherd. And what a shepherd does is a shepherd makes the sheep lie down. Well, that implies they don't want to lie down, right? Back in a day and age where there was no irrigation and whatever, as the seasons change, you had to lead them up to higher pastures, and the only way was to take them through a scary valley. That 23rd Psalm isn't about, death and the hard things in life. It's that a shepherd takes them there because, sheep don't repel or free climb rocks. They have to go through the valley to get the next thing. So there's lots of times as a leader, you've got to take people to where they don't want to go. But there's another one that's often missed, and that is it says he leads me beside still waters. And a good shepherd leader not only makes them lie down when they don't want to, leads them through scary things when they don't want to, but he adapts to their limitations. You see, sheep are afraid of running water, and yet running water is cleaner water. The shepherd is there with his staff, and he can jump in, but sheep have an intuitive fear of moving water. So what's he have to do? He's got to dam it up day after day after day, or find a place, and lead him somewhere extra. And it's all because he's adapting to a goofy weakness that the sheep have. And I love the balance in that 23rd Psalm. You got to lead people where they don't necessarily want to go, but you can't drive them to the point that they're scared, they're lost. You have to adapt to their limitations, which is exactly what Jesus did in his incarnation. He adapted, to our weaknesses. Hebrews talks about it, tested at all points like as we are. That, to me, is the mark of a good leader.
Absolutely amazing. What are some of the worst things that we can do when we encounter failure? Not just leaders, but your everyday Joe, when you've tripped up, messed up, fallen into the ditch. What are some of the things that common things that we do tell ourselves and that keep us sort of stuck in that mistake and identified by it?
Yeah, I think sometimes we define ourselves by our mistakes, and we're so myopic, we don't see far into the future. And so when we have a failure, a financial failure, a spiritual failure, a relational failure, whatever it would be, all we can often see is 3 to 6 months out. That seems like forever. And we all greatly overestimate what can happen in 1 year and greatly underestimate what can happen in five. And I'm always telling people who feel like their whole world is caved in, especially when they feel responsible for it, that let's take a calendar and let's circle a date 2 years out from now, because all you're seeing is 3 weeks from now or 2 days from now, and you're wondering why God hasn't stepped in and fixed it. Why haven't you conquered it? Why all the collateral damage is still there? And I go, you need to take the long-range vision, that whenever we get myopic spiritually, the enemy has us where he wants us, whether we're a leader or a follower. Short-term vision will always lead to a wrong decision.
I want you to say that again. Whenever we get myopic spiritually, the devil has us where he wants us?
Yep, absolutely.
Wow, fantastic.
Because, at that point, every trial becomes a lifetime. The 73rd Psalm is such a great psalm because Asaph is looking around saying, it's done me no good to follow God. the mockers are succeeding. What good has it done me? And then the Lord takes him into the tabernacle and shows him their destiny, and he suddenly goes, oops, oh, okay. Everything is different when we take the long view.
Boy, so good. You talk about how we have a tendency to sabotage innovation. What does that look like?
Well, innovation gets sabotaged in all kinds of different ways. And for a moment, kind of help me out in terms of what you're thinking on that one.
Okay, I got to pull my book open here because I pulled it out of a section. Sorry about that. Nope, that's my...
I started to answer and I went,
Yeah, nope, sure I do the same thing because for friends
Sorry,
listening...
This is live
Larry,
radio.
Yeah, I was going to say, and Larry wrote this a year ago. This is what happens when you release a book. You're on to the next thing. Let me just find it here if I can. Okay. And I can't.
Chapter and I'd know.
You know, it's okay. Totally my... Okay, well, let's move on to this one. And you touched on this, but I'd love to say a little bit more about the curse of hype, about marketing everything we do as a life changer. And that you said that most leaders are drawn to overselling. I know you touched on that. But again, yeah. I think in this, you know, quick Snapchat, tweet, Twitterverse, you know, we really are drawn to this. But it's, again, not sustainable.
Yeah, and let me talk to all of your listeners, whatever role they're in, because this not only applies to leadership, but I'm going to apply it to your spiritual journey as well, and then we carry it to leadership. But the thing is that most of life, as I mentioned earlier, is far more like a glacier than an avalanche. You know, I have people ask me all the time, what's God teaching you? And I shock them because often I say, well, nothing really new. they'll look at me like, what? Well, to be honest with you, if I have one or two significant things God teaches me in a year, that's a really good year. That most days, it's like he's asking me to be good today. Okay, be good. Follow me. And then there are those times and places where he speaks and says, you know what, this is the day for big change. This is the time and this is the place. We read things like the book of Acts in 30 minutes and forget it took 32 years. And as leaders, we do that. In our spiritual journey, we do that. We're always looking for the hype and the thing that isn't really how life works. I've been around a lot of people whose stories are out there, and it sounds like they just live on this perpetual high, and they don't. The path of obedience is often just a one more step day. And then in the midst of it, God shows up and says, this is not a normal day. And why we stay obedient is we never know when that's going to happen.
I'm going to pause and pray here. I'm thinking of that person listening today who is just weary and well-doing. And I'm thinking as you think about going from hype to hype, if that's your mindset, you're going to try to create that. And there's times you're going to create something that God's not even in at all. So to just humble ourselves and stay in step with God is such great wisdom. But Pastor Larry, would you pray for that person who is just weary and well-doing? Would you pray for that person today?
Sure. Father, we thank you so much for your goodness to us. And it's just amazing that you met us in our weakness, sending Jesus to become one of us and die for our sins. And in the midst of the things that we're facing day in and day out, we ask you to constantly bring us back to that cross, the sense that you are on our side, and the sense that there's an eternity that you're working on us, and everything doesn't have to take place and won't take place in a day, in a week. That it's your plan, and it's your plan for an eternity. And at the end of it, we're all amazed at who you are and what you've done with us. In Jesus' name,
Amen. Larry, always appreciate talking with you. Thanks for leading with such excellence and humility. Really appreciate the time today.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure to be with you again.
Yeah, bless you, sir. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. In just a bit, you'll find a podcast of today's program up on our website at myfaithradio.com. Coming up next, talk to Elise Fitzpatrick about her great book, Home, How Heaven and the New Earth Satisfy Our Deepest Longings. Can't wait for that conversation. So don't go away. Another great hour is up ahead. Hour two is up next.